Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Super Dan Anderson, and you are listening to the AMAA Legends and Pioneer Radio Blog Show with Professor Gary Lee and the Sport Karate Museum Archives, protecting the history, one warrior at a time. Tell them Super Dan sent you.
Aloha, everybody. This is Professor Gary Lee, and you're home tonight on a Tuesday night. And I want to say thank you, everybody, for listening to our show for the past 7 years. And golly bum, I've got my producer on the show, which I always have, and he gets to speak. What is going on? Hunty Bowen, are you there?
Hey, sir. How are you doing?
Good, sir. It's cold. You know, I've been without electricity for 30 hours, and it's 17 degrees.
Wow.
I got a little taste of North Carolina tonight, or the past couple of days.
Nice.
How you doing?
It's good here in North Carolina. It's good here.
Yeah,
so everything is good here.
70 degrees. Yeah. So anyway,
hey,
what's going on with Jesse Bowen?
Hey, he's really trying to keep it, as you guys are trying to keep it real, trying to move the world forward.
Well, tell me what's going on with your podcast and the book. We're honoring Chuck and everything. Benny, tell me what's going on.
Well, sir, you know, we've been, you know, really blessed and really trying to get the martial arts out there, trying to really keep it alive, really telling the history. Just like, you know, with the museum, you know, we committed back here 7 years ago to really work on making a difference in the martial arts. And you know, I really think we've made an impact bringing awareness to individuals about their values.
Yeah.
And this is what we're always trying to do is to, you know, it's not just the good old days, but it's the value that, you know, that we brought. And you know, I've heard the guys, James and everybody, talking about, you know, the days of the great competitions. And, you know, see, a lot of our young folks, they don't really know about that. They don't know who the players are. They don't know who the people are that have actually paved the way. So we really try to put forth, you know, through our books and, you know, the training programs and everything that we're doing is to keep that recognition alive. So what we, you know, of course, we're still working with Grandmaster Norris, promoting the Martial Arts Masters and Pioneers, the Chuck Norris edition. But we're also launching the first martial arts biography book for people with over 50 years in the martial arts. We're really having people come of age. And, you know, people now are in the martial arts for 50 years. So we've launched a dedication, a book dedicated just for people that's been in the martial arts for 50 years. So we've actually launched that. That's now taking nominations. And, you know, there's so many people that I personally don't know. So I would encourage everyone that's on our program, you know, to get in contact with me. You can inbox me or you can, you know, go to the website. And that website is lp.americanmartialartsalliance.com. And, you know, and let's, you know, really celebrate in 2021 that we got a pandemic going on. We've lost people. Martial arts schools have closed. A lot of people are growing and thriving in the economy, so we're doing that. We're also doing Sifu Goldberg's history book. That's going to be coming out in January, and that's celebrating all the people that have actually been inducted in his event. So we have a biography book that's going to be coming out on that. We got a couple other projects going on, but right now, you know, continuing to support the Norris organization and the American Martial Arts Alliance Foundation. So, you know, we just have a lot of really, you know, trying to do the good thing. The podcast is, you know, getting people to think about something positive. You know, how do I work? You know, how does meditation work? How do you get inside of yourself and make a connection to be a better person, to have a better life, you know, have better relationships? All that stuff is controlled by what you're thinking and what's going on inside of you.
Hey, Tyree just called, Hunchy. He's trying to get on. So him and Dean are the only ones we haven't got on the line yet, sir. And thank you so much for what you've done for us and what you've done for the museum. And thank you so much for believing in the museum. We appreciate you so much, Hunchy, Judge Bowen.
Thank you, sir.
No, God bless you. And get Tyree and Dean on the line. Okay. Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening to our show. We've been on the air, like I said, for 7 years, and we've interviewed some incredible people. And tonight, I have a very, very special guest, my old friend George Clark. But before I do, we're celebrating Black History Month, and I got a couple of my friends on the line. James Cook, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, the other guy that you didn't know, Robert Hartfield, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, Tyree, are you on yet? Okay, Tyree's calling in. Well, first we'll start with James. James, golly buddy,
yes.
I've known James since the early 70s, and he was scary. He was a black man in a kung fu uniform, and ladies and gentlemen, he was really, really, really good, but he was very proficient and a dangerous point fighter. James, God bless you, buddy. Thank you for being on the show.
Not a problem.
Now, you're a Vietnam vet. How many tours did you do in Nam?
One was enough.
Now, you trained in Kung Fu over there, but you were also a Taekwondo guy, right?
I started out in 1957 in Kodokan Judo, and I went from there to Ishinru, from Ishinru to Bak Mi Pai Kung Fu. I kept losing instructors, but I wanted to stay in martial arts. So as I would lose an instructor, I'd find another school. And I just worked my way up. And then when I was 19, I joined the military, and I ended up in Vietnam. Well, I was an instructor for the military, as well as continuing to do my other MOSs. I was a military policeman. I went in 65, and I was military police. Well, I had some other duties before military police in Vietnam. And then when I first got out of the military, it was 1974, and I ended up as a disc jockey for American Forces Korea Network, and every morning it was, "Good morning, Mr. Gentleman Jim in the morning time." And I went from there, got out of the military, and I got talked into going back into the military in 83, finished up with 21 years. But I've been through several different systems of martial arts, and my mother was a professional dancer. And she had me dancing when I was a kid, so Kung Fu just seemed like the perfect place for me to be.
Well, you know what? I really, really appreciate you, James. I mean, we go back a long time to the early 70s.
Long time.
Grand Swords events. And golly bum, we're also USK brats under Master Trius. And
oh, yeah.
God bless you for what you've done and what you've done for all of us. And I remember you coming to the grand opening of the museum, and you gave me a guitar that you made out of wood. Tell me about that hobby a little bit. But wait a minute. Before we go further, I got to introduce my co-host, which is a good friend of yours, AJ Perry.
Yes, sir. How are you?
Hey, I got James on the line. Isn't that cool?
How you doing, Jim?
I'm hanging in there, guys.
I remember him when I was
I know you guys are good friends,
young
too.
Martial artist, and just he was just a great competitor. Put me in awe when I first saw him.
Well, James, tell me about that wooden guitar that you gave me for the museum.
A few years back, I met a guy that handmade guitars. And I was an art major in high school in that whole nine yards. But he started showing me how to do it, and I went on to design and make my own guitars. And I think I've got a company that might be interested in me doing some things for them now.
Well, listen, I've got a great full contact fighter on the show tonight. And I know you fought full contact in Vietnam. Not so much in the ring here in the States. But, you know, James, the neat thing about kung fu. And what you did with it was you brought it to the light, along with other people like Alba Cassis and Kyrie and this other guy that's unknown, as we're going to talk to him. Robert Hartfield, are you there?
I'm here, as usual. I'm the last black man you talked to. Did you catch that?
I said the unknown black belt.
Hey, let me clarify something for you. I am not unknown.
I'm just kidding, Robert. You know that.
I know you're kidding. So I'm flirting with you.
I know you are. Well, listen,
Gary, I gotta tell you, I couldn't remember Robert until he said Steel Whip, and that's when I remembered him.
Well, I heard a rumor that you guys with the Steel Whip and the Bonsor used to dip it in poison. Is that true?
No, I dip it in Grand Marnier.
Yeah.
Wine. Okay, cool. Well, Tyree, did you get on the line yet? Tyree? I guess Tyree's still trying, but
when I was stationed overseas, I swear to God, I would get all of these different martial arts magazines, and I was constantly reading about Tyree, and it wasn't until I got back here some years later, and I ended up competing against Tyree in Florida at the USK Grand Nationals, and it was one of the biggest honors of my life.
Well, you know, I hope he gets on, and Auntie Bowen's trying to get him on now, and he'll be on. But golly, Robert Hartfield and James Cook, welcome to the show and celebrating Black History Month of your careers. Now, let's talk to Robert Hartfield for a minute. Now, you were a Taekwondo guy, and then you started doing Wushu and competition, correct?
Yeah, well, I started in Taekwondo, then I branched out into the Kung Fu arts. Not to say that Taekwondo wasn't a beautiful art, because I loved it when I was there, but when you open your mind to other experiences, you know, you can achieve a lot of things and stuff. So when I saw Kung Fu exhibitions, I was at the World Championships in California, and I saw that a group of Chinese people, you know, performing. My teacher won, Master Lee, Leo T. Fong and all these guys, and they were doing some fabulous stuff. The movements were so smooth and effortless. I said, wow, I want to do what those guys are doing.
Listen, Robert, James, if you guys aren't talking, please mute your phone because of the background noise. Now, one more thing, Robert, I want to say to you, and you too, James. Okay, both of you guys did beautiful forms, but when you hit people really hard, and you guys were dangerous point fighters, and you fake people out because if everybody see you do those pretty kicks and pretty movements, and then you you knock the hell out of them with those karate kicks because you were Taekwondo.
No.
Hey, Jim.
I started out in Shotokan. I went from Shotokan to Ishinru, Ishinru to Pakpi Pai Kung Fu. Back. And so I was in several different systems, but Kung Fu was my major system.
Yeah, you're a mutt. You're a mutt, James. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah.
AJ, you got a question?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Tell me, really, was everybody Kung Fu fighting?
I was.
Robert was.
Yeah, I definitely was. But you know, it's so funny. It's so funny, Gary. Remember we talked the last time I was on the radio with you. The misconception when I came here to the Texas area, because I came from Chicago, people had this thing. This guy, I was at a tournament, the U.S. Karate Championship. I was competing, and I finished forms, and then they just had us all in one melting pot. And then I didn't win that day, and I was, you know, most people get disappointed, dejected, and stuff. And my purpose for competition wasn't necessarily to say, you know, I won a trophy, fine. I wanted to show the art. So guy came up to me afterwards. He said, man, that was magnificent. He said, but let me explain something to you. You're in Texas. This is dominated by karate people. You would never, ever be dominated in this area. I looked at him. I said, oh, really? And then, Gary, you know the story after that, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah,
I'm just saying, this is a true story. You and James used to fake people out because you do those beautiful forms, and then you go out and kick people in the head. It'd be great. I loved it. I loved it. Well,
I think the greatest.
If Kyrie
greatest
comes
time
off,
I ever,
well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was gonna say. I remember the first time I ever fought in Texas. I fought Ray McCallum. And Ray looked at me. He goes, "We don't in Texas. We don't call it Taekwondo. We call it Texaekwondo." And I started laughing my butt off. And we finally met when we got to the ring. It was like fighting a mirror. I threw a back fist at the same time he did, and we ended up hitting each other's arms at the identical time. Next move, I jumped up in the air. He jumped up in the air at the same time, and we hooked legs in midair and hit the floor and rolled over and just busted out laughing at each other. Then he catches me with a back fist, busted my head open, and I had to go get a towel for my head because I was bleeding like nobody's business. And I walked back in the ring, and he looks at me and he says, "Mem Saab, you look like I'm from India." He says, "You look like you're from India." And we started laughing at each other and just beat the crap out of each other. And he took me by one point.
Well, who was your toughest fighter, James, back in the day?
The toughest fighter I ever fought, he broke my nose. He screwed up my knee pretty good. And I don't even know the guy's name. All I remember is I go out there, I bow to him, and me and Billy Blanks and I were at this tournament in Ohio, and we used to walk into a competition, and we look up and down the line, and we called it our menu, and we would look and see if we could find the clumsiest looking individual to fight as a warm up, and so Billy would find one, and I would find one. And I see this guy down at the end of the line, and he looked, his belt is sticking out like he just bought it. And I said, "I got me one." We get on the floor, and this guy is so clumsy as he's walking on the floor. I get out there, and all of a sudden, he nails me with a back fist. He sweeps my feet out, takes me down, ridge hand me to the nose, broke my nose. I get back up. It was a slaughter. I walked out and I walked over to the guy and I said, "Where did you train?" Because he was clumsy as all out. And he says, "I was the only member on the American Japanese team." And I went, "Oh my God!" From that day on, I never looked at the menu. I just thought about survive.
Robert, what about you? Who was your toughest fighter?
Well, let me mirror what James said and stuff. When I first came here, you remember Greek had his school, House of Greek?
Demetrius.
Yes. Yeah, Demetrius. Raymond, you know, I went up there to fight this tournament. I just got to the Texas area. So, you know, I'm fighting. We fighting down. I'm in the middleweight division. And then, you know, we fall down, and me and Raymond end up fighting. And I got ready to get in the ring. Everybody's screaming. It's like, you know, some of the superstars was in concert or something. I said, "Whatever." "Oh, man, that's Ray McCallum. You know who that is? That's Ray McCallum." I said, "Okay," and I'm Robert Whitfield. So, you know, so we got out there, and we got it on and stuff. You know, boom, 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 boom. You know, we went back and forth. We hit and stuff, and he does something. I did a sweep, took him down. "You can't sweep." You know, I said, "Oh, okay. I see where we're going with this." So me and Raymond got to fight, but he ended up beating me by a point. But when he got me, he said, "Hey, man," he said, "for a kung fu guy, you're a pretty good fighter." So I said, "Oh, okay." Here we go with that kung fu stuff again.
That's funny. Now, Gotti's changed a lot over the years.
By the
now,
way,
back in the day, James, when you were fighting in the 70s and 80s, and now it's 2020, have you seen the difference? What's the main difference you've seen?
Say what now?
What's the main difference you've seen in karate back in the 70s compared to what karate is now in 2020?
Oh, God. I hate to say it, but I don't think you could take one of the competitors today and stick him back there. He gets slaughtered.
Yeah.
Exactly.
By the way, can anyone hear me?
Yes. Is this Harry?
This is also Infundishi Tayari Cassell.
Hey,
hi,
y'all. I got my case about saying your name wrong because I've been saying it wrong for the past 40 years.
I'm not worried about that. What I wanted to say is that I'm on the line. I got confused by Days. And Jesse Bowen, Grandmaster Jesse Bowen, called me. Text me to say, hey, do you know this is the day we're supposed to do this? And because, you know, my birthday was yesterday and I was doing a bunch of things.
Thank you so much.
No, I appreciate it. But it's because of so many different things going on that I got the day confused.
Sure.
Now, and so I
listen, hey, buddy, I'm gonna have James sing you happy birthday. Go ahead, James, sing it.
No, I don't even do that. No,
don't do that.
Because you don't sing it.
To you, happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, my brother. Happy birthday to
nobody. Everybody's interrupting everybody. Nobody's finishing the story because of what?
Okay, so.
But first of all,
since I literally am interrupting where you were going because I just joined in.
We're celebrating Black History Month with three of my good friends, James Cook and Robert Hartfield. Before I bring on my special guest, Mr. Clark.
Okay.
But I want to say one thing.
First of all, we are the special guests. However, what I wanted to say, first and foremost, to you, Gary Lee.
Yes, sir.
What I have to say, because this is whenever I'm involved in anything, I have to start off by saying, in the name of God, the beneficent, the merciful, the giver and sustainer of all life, from whom all blessings flow, and to whom all praise is due. And we gather together as brothers in the martial arts love what we do, and we continue to do our best to bring out the best in others. And that is why we are on the path of a martial artist.
Amen.
But Gary Lee,
amen.
What you have done is your best to try and pull together great people who have established themselves, and you honor them for the work that they are doing.
Well, thank you.
Just the very first time that I came to California for that event.
Yes,
you did. When everybody was there. I don't want to mention the names because that's just an ego thing, but it's
amen.
You had them there. And you honored everyone. And that's
Bob,
what you have been trying to do all this time. I'm humbled and grateful that you would allow me to participate tonight. So
well, good. Let me
I came in late.
Class, those guys. Who was your toughest spotter?
Gary, can I say something first to Tyree and Jane? Tyree, are you there?
Go ahead, Robert. Go ahead.
This is Robert Hartfield. I want y'all to know something. It's an honor for me to be on the show with Mr. Cassell and Mr. Cook. You guys inspired me. Y'all older than me. Not that you're old, but age is but a number. But I saw you
I'm old.
I saw you guys long before. And Tyree, you probably don't remember. I met you a long time ago because I'm from Chicago. You remember, I know you remember Talona and all those, but you guys, I've watched you guys over the years, how you have inspired me, because I came from Chicago to the Texas area where Kung Fu wasn't very prevalent, you know, and I made it as such here, you know, to say, okay, well, you know, I wasn't going to let them run me away, so I became a mainstay, especially in the Texas area, and Gary can attest to this and stuff, you know, in pushing the art here. Not for an ego thing, but to show the essence of my art and what it was and how it was a part of me. Now, I appreciate all the arts, be it karate, judo, kung fu in them, but that's my art that I chose because I came from a taekwondo background, and I went to kung fu. And then for a period of time, I went to Beijing for 5 years while I was over there studying under Wu Bing, who's the Wu-Stu coach over there, Jet Li and all them. Me and Jet and all these guys, we worked out,
Robert, I told you not to throw those Chinese names at me because I don't know any of those names. So can't
the Kung Fu people know.
Okay.
AJ,
I've got three Kung Fu animals on the line. I know you feel weird because you're a Tang Soo Do guy, but these are three of the best Kung Fu guys we had in America.
Okay, wait.
Rain's on here. I just know if you knew that or not. I just wanted to let you know.
Well, don't go nowhere, Wolverine. I got to talk to you.
Oh, I ain't going nowhere.
Okay.
But Tyree, you
go ahead. Somebody
want to know y'all have inspired me. You know, from the time I saw y'all to period of now, where I follow Tyree and James. I keep up with you know the stuff that you've done over the years. You know, I'm amazed at your accomplishments. So are Tyree. When I saw Tyree doing forms, I said, wow, man, he is so smooth, so graceful, and so, you know.
Tyree was my when I was overseas, like I said, I used to read all the magazines, and I'd always see Tyree, and I said, he was my hero, and I came in to follow him.
Okay, well
Tyree, tell me your toughest fighter back. Okay.
Sir.
Yes, sir.
Just a moment. Let me just mention this.
Yes,
it was really true, and James will be able to verify this. James called me at my school one time, and so many years ago, he called me, and when he called me, I was so excited to hear his voice.
That's cool.
And it am I telling the truth, James?
You're telling the truth.
And I was so excited to hear his voice. But now let me share this part. James Cook, this is a man who stepped out on the floor to demonstrate his form, but he also stepped out on the floor to fight. And he is the person that I want to acknowledge that.
Oh, God.
Here is another fighter. This is somebody that's going to put what we train in the school to do to work on the floor against everybody else. So,
amen.
Tyree, let me tell you a funny story.
I'm just simply saying James Cook was the man.
Funny story about
who
James.
Also,
let me tell you a funny story. It's the early 70s. It's in Cleveland, Ohio. And James is wearing his black silk top. And he's, you know, he's a brother, and he's doing kung fu. And he had all these karate guys were making fun of him, okay? And I don't know if you heard it or not, but I saw it. They were making fun of him. And then what's really funny is when James fought him, he jab-slapped him and just beat the crap out of him. It was so cool. It was so funny because people didn't know good solid kung fu, but James did. And all three of you guys are responsible for Kung Fu in America, and God bless all three of you. And I'm so proud that all three of you are my friends, and you're history general for the Fort Carter Museum. Now, before I go on
I appreciate what you said. I don't know if anybody really remembers what I've ever done, but I'm telling you that
you're humble.
That James did it, and I mean, if anybody remembers me and my contribution, hey, thank you.
Yeah.
But I'm simply saying, I'm acknowledging the people who stood up and were there.
Yes, sir.
And so,
well,
hey,
if
anybody remembers me,
thank you. All three of you guys. This is a free-for-all question for all three of you. Now, all three of you are history generals for the Sport Karate Museum. How important is it that we keep our history alive for the future generations, whether it be Kung Fu or Karate or anything what Sport Karate did? All three of you, you can answer. Tyree, go first. Go ahead.
Okay. Wait. What is the question?
Come on.
The question
what is
how
the
important
question?
Is Sport Karate history?
One of the things that stands out to me the most is what my friend Al Weiss, for being
the Karate Magazine
publisher and editor of Official Karate Magazine.
Yes.
When Al Weiss decided to publish this book that talked about the golden age of the martial arts.
I got mine
right here.
And it was a significant moment because of his understanding, along with Joe Griffith, the photographer who captured all of the important elements and the important events of taking place. And the thing about, for me, the golden age, all of the competitors who really understood and loved the martial arts, but could fight. And they fought. And please listen to me just for a moment. Give me a moment. One of the things that's important with all of the talk about, and I know this may upset you all when I say it, but the demigod status that everybody has given Bruce Lee, this is the thing that I am talking about more. Fighters fight. That's what fighters do. He never fought. And I know that that's going to be a sore subject for people, but fighters fight. And these other two gentlemen who are on the phone now, y'all fought. And that's what we do. Fighters fight. Period. You can act, you can do all the other stuff, but fighters fight. And you have a proven record of when you have fought. Period. You have that. It's available. If you don't have it, then you need to make sure that it comes around. Now,
that's a good point.
I'm sorry. I got a little passionate there. Pardon me. Excuse me.
It's okay. Go ahead, James. How important is Sport Karate history? Your turn, James.
I'm in total agreement with Tyree. I like I said, when I would get on the floor, I remember a tournament I went to the referees were Tin Fong Wong, Dr. Meng Yi. It was several amazing people that were there, and they were the judges of my a form competition and weapons, and I was home on leave. My mom was in a coma, and they had to send me home from Korea. And I was worried about my mom and everything, and a friend of mine said, go to this tournament with me. So I went to the tournament. And Artis, as a matter of fact, Artis Simmons was the center referee. And,
good, guys. Because you bring
and I go out on the floor, and I ended up taking first place in forms. Then I took first place in weapons, and there were a bunch of guys standing on the sidelines, and it goes, oh, look at the little Twinkle Toes guy out there, and Bruce Lee had just come out, and they're saying, oh, he wants to be a little black Bruce Lee. And so then That's it came right. time to fight, and the guy that was calling me the little Twinkle Toes was my first opponent. And Artis Simmons tells me, Artis Simmons says, take your fighting positions. So I'm standing there, and I turn sideways, and my hands are down. And Artis walks over to me and says, put your hand. He says, have you fought in competition before? And I said, well, the last time I fought in competition in the United States, I was 12 years old. He said, well, you have to put your hands up to defend yourself. And I said, my hands are fine right here.
This was the name Roy Kerbin.
Right, yeah, I remember that.
It changed everything because before then, it was, golly bum, 3 points for everything. And you had 2 points in
Ohio. They had 2 points in Ohio. The Koreans did.
Yeah.
They did always did that.
If I remember correctly, it was 2 points for a kick, but it was 3 points for a flying kick.
Or spanning.
Oh, so different. In
a
Korea,
spanning kick to the head in
the
NBA was three. Or
right, a kick to the head. A kick to the head was three.
Yeah.
Well, you know, let me ask you a question, guys, and this is a universal question. When they changed it to 2 points per kick and 1 point for a punch, how much did you feel it changed?
I'll tell you what. I was in Korea at that time, and what they did was a gentleman named Kim Un-yoon basically bought the Olympic taekwondo thing, and he pushed a bunch of black belts from Korea into the United States. And because I knew one of them was a gentleman in Cleveland, Ohio named Kim Moon. And the guy opened up a studio, and one of his students I knew in Korea. And when he left, when he was in Korea, he was a second degree. But by the same time the plane landed in the United States, he was an eighth degree. And they flooded the Olympics with these Korean instructors, and they took over the Olympics, the AAU. And it went from, because when I first fought in the AAU, it was AAU Karate. And then all of a sudden it became AAU Taekwondo, and the kick, the points for kicks changed. You couldn't do drop kicks. Punching points counted for nothing, basically, because the Koreans got awful punchers. And I can remember I was the first black actor in Korean movies, and I did a movie over there called The Last Five Fingers. And I remember when I came back to Daegu from Seoul, I get out of a taxi and I'm going into a bar, and this guy comes up to me and says, "You're James Cook." And he goes, "Taekwondo is better." And this is by the time I had started studying Kung Fu. And I said, "Okay, that's fine with me." And he looks at me, he says, "No." And it was like something out of a movie. And he says, "We fight." And I cold cocked the sucker with the right cross. He goes down and he looks up at me and he goes, "You hit me with your hands." And I said, yeah, you get up and I'll hit you with him again. And that was the end of that. but that's a true story, so help me. And the entire face of basic martial arts, Korean is my second language. My first wife was Korean. And we were at what was the Korean guy's name that wrote Cho, Henry Cho? And they were having a tournament in Pittsburgh. They were having a tournament in Pittsburgh, and it was me, Dave Rupert, the rifleman, Kenny Ferguson, and Jeff Ripper. And I was, Rupert was fighting heavyweight. Anyway, what happened was, it turned out all the judges were Korean. And I'm sitting at ringside. The judge and I'm sitting. I was sitting up in the bleachers earlier, and I'm listening to the Koreans talk, and they're talking about how they're going to win all the money, and they were giving me money, and they were talking about how they were going to win it, and the money, instead of going to the students, was going to go back to the instructors. And I'm listening to all of this, so I tell Rupert and the guys, I said, it's a setup. So we get in the Rupert, I think Jeff Ripper went first, and the center judge is coaching the Korean student in the ring, and I'm listening, and I started to interpret to the guys every time they were in the ring. The Korean instructor would say "Toyu chagi murihara," which means kick him in the head. Get a kick in the head, and I'm interpreting, and I'm telling Gripper, here comes a kick to the head. So the guy goes to throw a kick to the head, and Gripper cold cocks him. And it went on like that until it was my time to get in the ring. And if you remember the movie Best of the Best, what was the Korean guy's name that was on the American team?
Simon Ree.
Right. So Simon Ree gets in the ring with me. And we're in the ring, and we're facing each other, and I know what's going on. So all of a sudden, I started singing, Muda, Muda, Kashiwa, Tugunimi, Kashidungo. And he looks at me, and it's an old Korean lullaby. And he looks at me, and I cold cocked his ass. And the judges were freaked out, and it was... And we walked out of there with about $1,200 a piece. And the thing about it, well, after that, I saw him once again about 7 months later at another tournament. I walked in and sat down, and the whole Korean group got up and relocated. And the thing about it was,
James,
the Koreans
brought the whole. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
James, I'm sorry. I got to interrupt you. I've got one of my special sponsors, Dr. Lee. Dr. Lee, are you there?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
A crazy night, huh?
Oh, yeah. It's a crazy night.
How are you doing? That's twice in a row that people get upset because my radio. I'm sorry. All I can do is put people on the air. You know, I don't understand why something's happened, but God bless you, Dr. Lee. You invented something called the SetVR.app. You and Marie Shanahan and Rick Shanahan and yourself. It's a hologram that attacks you through virtual reality. Talk a little bit about that, what that is, sir.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. First of all, I hope your storm in Texas goes away fast, because being without power for such a long period of time can be mind-wrecking.
Amen.
In regards to our program, SetVR, my partners, my marketing director, my developers, and myself are excited about SetVR, self-defense enhancement training, and virtual reality as a platform when one can practice their skills in self-defense, whenever, wherever they want. The program is compact and portable. You can take it anywhere you travel, and even during a pandemic, where we have right now with the COVID pandemic, you continue to practice while practicing social distancing. We're super excited about our pending updates, whereby the interactions with the holograms will become more exciting, fast, and unpredictable. With the Oculus Rift or Oculus Quest headset, you will be transported to a virtual reality platform whereby a hologram will confront and attack you when you least expect it with random attacks. The important goal of SetVR is to have you to be able to neutralize an attack or threat that is sudden, unpredictable, and random. You'll be able to practice to improve your skills in evasion through angular, linear, or circular movements. To avoid or to place you in an opportunistic position of an advantage to neutralize as you practice to improve your skills in timing, speed, and accuracy as you develop muscle memory, and subsequently my goal, develop a reflex response to a threat or a stimulus to neutralize without hesitation, just as you would when a doctor taps on your knee and creates a knee jerk, or you remove your hand from a hot stove. You move reflexively with a reflex response. This is a platform whereby you can practice and utilize what you have been taught in techniques and katas and forms in your schools, in your dojos, in a program for application against a threat or stimulus that is a random attack. We plan to have future updates whereby you have multiple attackers, even at a home invasion, in a war zone, or even a barroom setting. SetVR will push you maximally to your limits in self-defense. We recently updated our program with kicking and punching combinations, and also knife attacks. As you know, knife attacks up front and close are very, very deadly attacks. We've implemented that program in regards to a training or a practice program in this program. We plan to have future updates, random virtual matches, whereby a controller such as Professor Gary Lee can confront an attacker, a hologram, say AJ, Wolverine, or Jesse Bowen, and practice your techniques in regards to neutralization with each other, either different parts of the country or even different parts of the world. You'll be able to learn from each other as you practice your skills in neutralization. We've implemented metrics that you will record the number of successful punches, number of blocks, number of evasions, whether you're right or left side dominant, and also record endurance as time spent in the experience. You'll be able to learn the importance of creating a diversion when you grasp the attacker's arms or wrists to create a 1 to 3 second pause, a natural response, a window of opportunity for neutralization. We've implemented a program of mindfulness, of stretching, meditation exercise, and you'll be also be presented with your own personal yoga instructor. So please continue to visit our website at setvr.app. We will continue to update SetVR in the future to help you practice and maximize the application of self-defense when you want and where you want. We continue to be proud to endorse Professor Gary Lee and the Sports Karate Museum to be a future platform of his vision of the History Portal. With that being said, Professor Gary Lee, some few words about your History Portal.
Well, I will keep it short. I just want to say that with SetVR Diet, we're going to change the industry with the hologram and, of course, the History Journal portals to tell the history of people like particularly Rick Wigginton, rest in peace, Jim Harrison, rest in peace, Alan Steen, Mike Stone, Jerry Smith, and J. Pat Burleson to start it out. And then eventually we'll have all the History Generals on the website. So thank you, Dr. Lee, for being on the air. And I've got to cut it short tonight because I want to hit 3 minutes with a Wolverine. Wolverine, are you there? Wolverine.
Here. Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Sorry, I was actually putting night vision on the rifle. So, yeah, so Wolverine's always doing some.
We're running late tonight, so make it 3 minutes, please. We're talking about blackballing and karate. You got a vision on that?
Yeah, you know, that's just, you know, the problem with that is people blackball people when they're insecure of what they're doing. I mean, some people may need to be blackballed if they're not legitimate or things like that. But let me tell you, one time I got blackballed from the NBL, not from all the different tournaments, because the tournament people loved me, because most of them, because I had the largest team. We had 69 people going and competing in competition. But with that made my daughter and I, and you probably remember this, Professor, we were dominating NBL for years and years and years, and my team, and it upset some of the other guys that put a lot of money into the NBL. And so, boy, he didn't want to go by his own rule book. So, you know, I got into arguing with him, so look, this is the rules, this is your rule book. I'm just trying to enforce your rules. We're competing by your rules, but you're letting those guys break your rules. And so then he tried to blackball me, and I told him pretty much what he did is I won two world titles right back to back at one time, and then he called me up and he said, I'm taking one of the world titles away just to show you that I'm Boyce Liddell. I decided your face. I said, look, everybody knows what kind of competitor I am. I don't need your justification or your approval. And I said, look, I said, I'll go to NASCAR and do the same thing I'm doing here. He said, there's no way you'll do it in NASCAR. Well, I went straight to NASCAR, jumped in the middle of the competition season. And you know, with NASCAR, you have to compete on the world tour and hit all the tournaments. So they were halfway through. I jumped in NASCAR as unseeded. By the end of the year, I was the number one ranked competitor and won the world title in three different divisions. And then I did the same thing consecutive for the next 3 years. You know, so sometimes blackballing people backfire. That's a bullying move in some cases. Some cases it may be justified. You know, I know some people that are just, you know, the undesirables are not in it for the right reason. And yeah, they probably need to be blackballed. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, when people are doing the right thing, you shouldn't blackball them. And like a lot of people know, and I'm not going to say that's why the NBL class, but I will say, and Andrew Coblin, Romeo Gulgalin, you know, Gorgles, a lot of those people started leaving the NBL, and then next thing you know, it was less and less and less and less people because they realized I was a mainstay. I went everywhere. I was the only competitor to hit every single NBL tournament that Boyce Liddell had in 1 year. And you know,
well, Wolverine.
We
appreciate your opinion, and
okay.
I'm sorry for tonight's
guest. I know it's been a hectic night. No problem, sir.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We're live radio, and sometimes things happen. I want to make an apology to Mr. Clark for him getting upset and hanging up. But God bless George. He was an incredible full contact fighter, and hopefully he'll get to come back and he'll get to talk and. And we'll talk about his career, but
Gary, I'm still here with you, Gary.
I know you are. Mr. Cassell and Mr. Argill, God bless you guys, and Mr. Clark, God bless you, and I love you, AJ. I love you, Dean Pyle from Wolverine, and I appreciate you guys putting up with me all these years. And God bless you. We'll see you next week, and we'll have the BKF next week, and Jerry Smith and Ron Chappelle. And we'll have another topic with the Wolverine. And as we all every
night.
Week.
Great interview, Jimmy.
Okay. Absolutely. Well, listen, guys, I love you guys. I really do. And as we always say every week, mahalo and aloha.
Mahalo.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Fun show.
I'm telling you, too crazy for me. Oh, man.